Greetings, brothers and sisters. My name is Mbambulu, and the name of this broadcast is The Only Real Solution. You can check out my website at www.asetbooks.com. That's www.asetbooks.com. asetbooks.com. My email address is there also, as will be a copy of this radio broadcast. So if you miss a broadcast or want to repeat here, you can visit my website and listen 24/7 at your convenience. This broadcast, The Only Real Solution, is another edit of Mbambulu and Slide Over Productions. Hang on for a couple of minutes. I'll be right back.
I'm
I want to begin this broadcast by glancing through a few items in some of the official documents approved by the writers of the Code of Umoja, the new African Constitution. I am not going to cover the documents in detail, as I just said. I'm just glancing. But I want you to be aware of some fine points that have come to my attention. New Africans who found territories can get a feel for what directions territories might be encouraged to take so that they share the same core values. This will result in easier merging of territories as we advance towards more involved stages of the Black Nationalist Program. One notable observance is the persons who are called out by name. All of the persons mentioned were warriors or advocates of self-government for Black people. Gabriel Prosser, Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman. All of these persons were outright warriors, and three of the rest, Marcus Garvey, Noble Drew Ali, and Malcolm X, were just as strong in their quest for Black self-government. The one questionable person, Elijah Muhammad, spoke of the need for land as a tenet of his organization, but he did little to move in that direction whenever an opportunity arose to demonstrate how much of a Black nationalist he was. So much for that. There is no mention of the Frederick Douglasses, W.E.B. Du Boises, and the like, probably because they did not project the type of energy or commitment to the belief that we can go it alone that a true Black nationalist projects. They were middle grounder type persons. What they were advocating and how they were conducting their discontent promised little possibility of taking us to the higher level we needed to get to. To be a serious New African, you need to be strong and unafraid of change, neither gradual nor immediate, nor confrontations. When you are abused by a predator and you attempt to find middle ground, the predator takes that as a sign of weakness and continues to do his thing without worrying about you putting up any noticeable resistance. We New Africans have tried that for a long time, and it has failed us for a long time. But let's glance at the New African Declaration of Independence. It declares that we were conscious of ourselves as a nation before 1750, and some of us had already fought against European and American white supremacists for the independence of our people even before the law of the United States had made it clear by 1660 that we would not be permitted to join their white nation. It also states that, having again and again, in place after place, in the midst of our war of defense and liberation, fought for and established the foundations of independent Black states in areas now occupied as states by the United States of America. It also states that, having again and again, in place after place, in the midst of our war of defense and liberation, fought for and established the foundations of independent Black states in areas now occupied as states by the United States of America. The Declaration then makes it clear that New Africans claim no rights from the United States of America other than those rights belonging to human beings anywhere in the world. And these include the right to reparations due us for the grievous injuries sustained by our ancestors and ourselves because of United States lawlessness. The final point I will cite from the Declaration of Independence relates to economics. In the Republic of New Africa, the major means of production and trade is a function of the government, which must assure the benefits of our genius and labor to society and all its members, and to encourage and reward the individual for hard work and initiative and insight and devotion to the revolution. What New Africans need to face up to is this. We cannot grab control of trade and production, nor reward New African individuals as they should be rewarded for their work and genius as long as we remain caught up in John and Jane Doe's economic scheme of things. The green dollar is worse than a liability for us when it comes to that. We need to develop our own economic system. Listen to me. We need to develop our own economic system. Develop our own economic system. And it needs to revolve around our own unique currency, the black dollar. Now, I will briefly cite a couple of items from the New African Creed. One is the belief that the community is more important than the individual. And the other is the belief that the fundamental way to gain power and end oppression is to build a sovereign black nation. These are some of the things you need to give consideration to as you lay the foundation for the territory you have declared as land independent of the United States of America. It does not de-emphasize individual initiative nor compensation. It simply states what should be obvious to a balanced human being. If the community is well off, then the individual is well off. Just as importantly, if some individuals are rich and most of the community is poor, those who are rich cannot have peace of mind because those who are poor will represent an ever-threatening presence. A person who is rich within a capitalist context is probably guilty of treacherous acts against society, and the victims of that treachery, individuals and families who are in need, have the right to seek relief. When the lion gets hungry, nobody accuses him of a crime when he attacks an antelope to relieve his hunger. The same applies to a poor person whose bad fortune is the direct or indirect result of a vicious economic order. Finally, let's take a glance at sections 1 and 2 of the New African Constitution, the Code of Umoja. Umoja, by the way, means unity. Section 1 deals with citizenship. It addresses citizenship by birth, saying each African person born in America is a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. It addresses citizenship by parentage, stating that any child born to a citizen of the Republic of New Africa is a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. And it addresses citizenship of other Africans, declaring that persons of African descent, wherever their original place of birth or domicile in the world, have a right to New African citizenship. New Africa not only maintains but stresses its African essence. So the rights and privileges of all African people are accorded equality by the New African Constitution. All black people are our brothers and sisters and must be treated as each and every New African is treated. Of course, the code makes clear that persons cannot be forced to be New African citizens and can renounce or reject New African citizenship whenever they feel like it. So the persons who are listening to this broadcast have the freedom to choose between New Africa or another country. And it is best for New Africa that they do so because we don't want persons in our midst who don't want to be with us. Those type persons pose serious threats to our pace of progress. Section 3 of the Code of Umoja is titled Policy with Regard to New African Land Claim. In that section, it is stated that it shall be the policy of the government of the Republic of New Africa to recognize the just cause of the American Indian nations and other oppressed nations for land in North America. It shall be the policy of the provisional government to negotiate with the American Indian nations the claims which conflict with the claims of the New African nation and to resolve these claims in the spirit of justice, brotherhood, and mutual revolutionary commitment to the human and natural rights of all oppressed nations in North America. We need to take a couple of minutes to comment on this section because some people always bring up the land rights of the Indians. that the RNA, or Republic of New Africa, is effectively proposing to take land that belongs to the Indians by claiming that black people have the right to take control of some states that are presently occupied by John and Jane Doe's people. As the Code of Umoja states, the RNA is committed to the human and natural rights of all oppressed nations in North America, not just the so-called Indians. And the code especially mentions American Indian nations. And this is where things start getting foggy, as far as I'm concerned. Number one is, what is the relationship between American Indian nations and Native Americans? Do the rights of the American Indian nations get priority over the rights of Native Americans? The question of who are the Native Americans begs for attention here. In the year 2020, history is quite clear that the first settler occupants of North, Central, and South America were black people. It is clear now that black people were in the Americas long before the birth of the person who is called Jesus Christ, much more than 2,000 years ago. And it is clear that when the Spanish arrived here almost 2,000 years later, one of the groups of people they called Indians were black. So black presence here, whether uninterrupted or not, spans from before the time of Jesus Christ to the time when the Europeans arrived. There is no record of any other group of Indians occupying this land prior to the birth of Jesus. But records exist that different groups of Indians were in the Americas somewhere around 1300 or 1400 years ago. If black people were here more than 2,000 years ago, and others arrived hundreds of years later, who then does the term Native American refer to? And weren't they all citizens of a nation? Additionally, there is much evidence that black Indians and non-black Indians waged war together against John and Jane Doe's army, and that the relationship between black runaway slaves and Indians was in no way comparable to the relationship that existed between slaves and white people. There was no grand distinction made between the black Indians who were forced to march hundreds of miles with non-black Indians, who were both being robbed of their homelands by the United States government. And early on, even when black Indians were referred to as slaves, it was mostly polemical, just a mechanism to deter John and Jane Doe. After all, why would a black person who was brave and strong enough to challenge the status of the United States government submit to being enslaved by the relatively weak Indian populations? It doesn't make sense. The blacks and Indians had always coexisted as equals, and no big deal was made of that until the Indians were granted the right to open casinos on Indian reservations and make a whole lot of money. Certain so-called Indians didn't want to share the returns with the black Indians, and all of a sudden there was talk about the blacks not being Indians, but slaves of the Indians, and therefore didn't deserve a slice of the casino pie. So when the so-called Indians had the opportunity to recognize the rights of their black Indian brothers and sisters, did they concern themselves with the rights of the blacks? Heck no. If they could have tricked all of the black Indians into standing on the edge of Kings Canyon, the so-called Indians would have pushed all of the black Indians over the cliff. Think about that, New Africans. We need to be mindful of the human and political rights of all people, but it would not be wise to make decisions that are based on insufficient analysis. As a matter of fact, the best chance the so-called Indians have of regaining some of their land is if we, New Africans, force John and Jane Doe to give it up. We can then negotiate with them and allocate a section of that free land to the so-called Indians. As the situation presently exists, the Indians don't have any land, and it is unlikely they will get any until the new African struggle is complete. In the absence of that, the status quo stays put, and that status quo has made it clear what the ownership of land status of the so-called Indian is. And there is one more thing I need to say about this issue, particularly around the time period not long after Christopher Columbus got lost and tripped over the Americas. What I would like to know is where in the heck did all of these pale-faced Indians come from? The Spanish, Portuguese, and French explorers spoke of seeing Indians when they first came to see what Columbus had discovered, but none of them spoke of seeing a pale-faced Indian. They mentioned black Indians, red Indians, other Indians with skin that had a noticeable amount of color, but no mention at all was made of a pale-faced Indian, at least not to my knowledge. As a matter of fact, the Indians themselves reportedly referred to white people as pale faces. So they definitely were not using that term when referring to other Indians. So where did all of these pale-faced Indians come from? That's what I want to know. And it is notable that at the forefront of the initiative to strip the black Indians of their slice of the casino pie are pale faces who call themselves Indians. Instead of declaring that black Indians have questionable claims to being called Indians, those pale-faced Indians need to show proof that they are legitimately Indian. It seems to me, based on their pale faces and their lack of the values that epitomize the real Indians, it seems to me that they have to prove that they have not expropriated an Indian identity in order to advance their typically self-serving personal agenda. So new Africans must treat the citizens of American Indian nations justly. But new Africans need not grant that respect to opportunists and scoundrels who cannot prove they are who they purport to be. Pale-faced Indians with behavior patterns and racist inclinations that are not typically Indian? Anything can go through changes over hundreds of years, but I have my doubts. I need to see some proof that a pale-faced person with non-Indian behavior patterns is actually an Indian. New Africans, beware. Now, Section 2 of the Code of Umoja is entitled Order of Precedence of New African Law. I am mentioning this so you will know how organized and thoughtful were the persons who put together this document. The Republic of New Africa is no flighty proposition. It talks about the Code of Umoja as the supreme law of the Republic of New Africa. It establishes district courts and their areas of jurisdiction, people's courts, justices and their jurisdiction, and how all of these courts relate to one another. It mentions the People's Center Council, the legislative center of the black nation, legislation, acts, directives, resolutions, and orders of all officers and governmental bodies of the Republic of New Africa, and the order in which they shall have precedence. For example, directives and orders of the People's Revolutionary Leadership Council, directives and orders issued by the President, directives and orders issued by the Vice Presidents or National Ministers, and on and on and on. The Republic of New Africa is no ragtag assemblage, no plea to white power, America, or anything of the sort. The Republic of New Africa is serious business, so all of the New Africans, wherever they might be, need to take its status as a thing of honor and accord it its proper respect. As the founder of a territory, you do not need to be concerned about organizing your territory spot on with the structure described in the Code of Umoja. However, you need to know that what you are organizing will evolve into an integral part of a very well-organized economic and political entity. Being a responsible New African is nothing to take lightly, but you have the maturity to persist and grow. Don't sell yourself short. and don't play yourself cheap. Let's talk about an independent black economy for a few minutes. There is nothing more essential to the liberation of black people than getting out of the practice of functioning within John and Jane Doe's economic parameters. As I stated earlier, an independent black economy must revolve around our own currency, the black dollar. And as I also stated earlier, we, new Africans, have to build this new economic system and make it viable. There is no magic pill that can ease this process. Nothing that's going to come prepackaged, preassembled, and ready to operate once we take it out of the box. No, new Africans. New Africans have to build a new economic system, and we have what it takes to do it. How do we create an independent black economy? The first thing we need to do is clear our mind of all the images we have of what an economy is and of what black people can and cannot do. Wherever there are living life forms, there exists an economy. When cavemen went in search of food, they were participating in an economic system. Since we are in the year 2020, we don't have to act like cavemen acted, but we must understand that if they could create and participate in their own economic system, we can create and participate in our own independent economic system too. You, a new African, have to become confident in thinking independently. You can't limit your frame of reference to what you have become accustomed to and have to stop thinking the negative, doubtful thoughts you have been taught to think about what Black people can't do. That is our number one obstacle, because we have to act together to evolve an independent economy, and we can't act together if we openly or secretly think Black people are less capable of accomplishing things that human beings have historically accomplished as a matter of course. So the first thing you must do is get John and Jane Doe out of your mind. The second thing you have to do is get rid of the doubt you have about what Black people ain't gonna do. If you can do those two things, you will have eliminated two of the three greatest obstacles to us developing an independent Black economy. The only other requirement will be doing something we have not been disciplined enough to do so far: developing a home base that all of us can regard as the place to turn to for direction and guidance. That is what we have heretofore failed to avail ourselves of, and that is why the Republic of New Africa is so important. Its purpose is to be that nerve center, that base of operations that transform incoherent, random acts and activities into calculated steps mandated by a carefully thought-out plan of operations. But you and enough other New Africans have to participate in order to make it all that it can be. So let's look at that from the perspective of economic independence. The activities that people partake of on an ongoing basis are the foundation of an economic system. The caveman had air, land, water, vegetation, and other living beings occupying the land, and the caveman got hungry, as a matter of course. Thus, the presence of basic elements and needs were provided by nature. What New Africans in search of an independent Black economy have to do is redefine those needs, recategorize them, reprioritize them. Once we change how we think about resources and needs, we can begin to imagine how we can build an economy that is more to our liking. So you have to think as the caveman thought. First, you have to imagine that your condition is similar to the caveman's condition. That shouldn't be hard to do, because Black people in the United States of America have to start from scratch, just as the caveman had to start from scratch. We have air, we have land, water, plants, other living beings occupying the area that can be used as a food source and source of other materials, etc. But unlike the caveman, we are not starving to death and freezing to death, because we get everything we need from John and Jane Doe. And that is the part we have to get off of. And how do we get off of that part? By downplaying John and Jane Doe's economy and making the sacrifices necessary to build our own independent economic system. I keep saying we have to build a new economic system, and I do so because I want you to think about that and think about that. We are going to have to coordinate our activities. That is, develop products and services that will serve to replace some of the products and services that John and Jane Doe presently provide us with. And we are going to have to develop new goods and services that will satisfy new needs for us, simply as a step towards getting away from John and Jane Doe's control. We are going to have to get accustomed to doing things generally thought of as weird, unacceptable, or strange. We have to function based on our understanding of where we want to be, without any consideration for customary activities that really don't serve us well. For example, as a result of the United States' blockade of Cuba, Cubans couldn't acquire parts and services it needed to upkeep its sewage system. Rather than allow this inconvenience and several others like it to cause them to cave in to U.S. pressure people were instructed to not flush the stool on a regular basis. There was really no need to flush the stool when you urinated because urine is not a health hazard. In fact, it can be used for therapeutic purposes. People would normally flush because urine gets smelly after a while and doesn't look good. But because Cuba had to do things differently, its people realized that unnecessary water usage was not a good thing. Additionally, when a person used the bathroom to have a bowel movement, they did not flush the toilet paper down the stool because the paper put an undue burden on the sewage system and caused a lot of problems. So a basket was placed next to the toilet. The toilet tissue that was used to wipe yourself was placed in that basket, and the basket was checked regularly and its contents disposed of in a less problematic fashion. The Cubans were placed in an unfair position, so they had to think outside the box and defy norms in order to control their destiny. New Africans are going to have to do likewise, but with emphasis on economic objectives, because if we don't, the mob activities like Greenwood and the police lynchings that occur every day will continue to dominate our lives. So what can you do that is outside of the box but necessary? You need to start thinking in terms of what you do that is easy to satisfy your needs and wants but keeps us powerless, and how you can gradually but noticeably make the shift to doing something that is personally inconvenient but empowering. Be very clear about what I am saying here, because this is not about buying black. Buying black is a losing proposition for New Africans, because a black capitalist is just as cancerous as a white capitalist. So buy black is just another inadequate solution somebody came up with. What we need is an entirely different economy that functions in accordance with communalist context, not a capitalist context. And you can initiate the shift that needs to be initiated. Black economic independence is a political grenade that we hold in our hands. But black economic independence is a difficult proposition if it is not part of a coordinated effort. Our political structure is the government of the RNA, the Republic of New Africa. Those who found territories will get experience in how to run a political unit and put themselves in a position to take control of the government of the RNA and coordinate all of the activities of the various territories. I hope you are connecting the dots. Let's review. There are three main obstacles. You can get John and Jane Doe out of your life without getting any help from any other New African. You can stop doubting black people and playing black people cheap without any assistance from another New African. But in order for you to become economically independent, there needs to be a functioning body that coordinates the activities that responsible New Africans take to get to the next level. If you found a territory, increase its population, and carry out your territory's administrative and political processes efficiently, your territory and or other efficiently run territories can unite and gain control of the national government and coordinate the activities and policies necessary to take New Africans to the next level. I mentioned step number one of the process. Start thinking in terms of what is easy for you to do that will satisfy your needs but keep you and black people powerless, and what you can do to gradually but noticeably make the shift to doing something that is personally inconvenient right now but empowering in the long run. In short, you want to make changes in your personal life that will help you and all of us in the long run. What you can do to rely on John and Jane Doe's system less, that is the focal point. I want you to think about that right now. I'm going to take a 2 or 3 minute break just so you can think about that right now. It's okay if you can't think of very much, but it's not okay if you don't try, because trying, even when you don't succeed immediately, trying can get you on the road to succeeding. John and Jane Doe have trained us to not think outside of their box and not want to act outside of their box. Trying to construct anything outside of their box, even a thought, will do you good. Remember, you need to think about the easy things you do to satisfy your needs and wants, but keep you and Black people in general powerless. And then think about how you can gradually but noticeably make the shift to doing something that is personally inconvenient right now, or that might be personally inconvenient right now, but empowering in the long run. Think about it. You got 2 or 3 minutes to do so. Okay, I hope you have tried to think about what I said before the break. As is probable, some of you could think of things, others tried to but could not come up with anything, and still others decided it wasn't worth thinking about, probably because they aren't planning on making any unusual sacrifices or putting the goodies they have gained over the years at risk. We get the whole gamut, as usual. The issue is the easy things you do that will satisfy your needs and wants, but keep you and Black people powerless, on the one hand. And, on the other hand, how you can gradually but noticeably make the shift to satisfying some needs and wants in a way that might be less convenient or inconvenient right now, but empowering for Black people in the long run. Let's put this in a little bit different context. Two things dominate this consideration. One is, how do you feed John and Jane Doe's system less? And the other is, how do you help jumpstart and feed an independent Black power economic system that does not exist at this particular moment? When you take the easy way out when it comes to satisfying your needs and wants, you are feeding John and Jane Doe's system and keeping you and other new Africans powerless. If you feed John and Jane Doe less, you are going to have to suffer some inconveniences that you don't want to suffer. But in so doing, you will have the opportunity to build a different system that will be shaky in the beginning, but in time will be efficient and empower Black people as well. The transfer away from John and Jane Doe and towards new Africans is not only what you have to figure out how to do, it is what you must actualize. And to make it even more difficult for you, you must understand that the two processes are related but different. Why? Because the fact that you stop supporting John and Jane Doe does not mean you are going to swing that support towards helping build an independent Black power economic system. That is a decision you must consciously prioritize, because if not, you are going to lapse right on back into doing what you have habitually done, even if you don't like doing it. If you try to break away from relying on John and Jane Doe for a good or service, you will have to either do without that good or service or seek that good or service within the context of a different economic system. One of your responsibilities after you abandon John and Jane Doe, then, is to fill the void you created by providing goods and services to replace the ones John and Jane Doe had been providing, and to also imagine and produce new goods and services that Black people will need and want in the future. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. One, suffering as you go cold turkey on John and Jane Doe. Two, producing goods and services to replace those you need that you no longer get from John and Jane Doe. And three, imagining and producing new goods and services that will serve as the backbone of the new independent economic system new Africans need so much. This is where you get the opportunity to land a punch that helps Black people assume control of their power and take our necks out from under John and Jane Doe's knees. So, in order to help build an independent Black economic system, you and other new Africans need to produce goods and services that will evolve into the backbone of an independent Black economy. But not only that, you need to concentrate on purchases you can make on a regular basis that will give this independent Black economic system the time it needs to make it through the rough times and mature. And you have to remember that the only currency that will be circulating within the Black economy will be the Black dollar. All of that sounds like a big deal to some people, because they have never attempted to do anything worthwhile on their own. But this is what all independent people do, and there is no reason why Black people who live on land we own that is presently claimed by the United States cannot do likewise. The key to the success of all of this is coordination. That is why the government of the Republic of New Africa is so important. And that is why it is important for new Africans to found independent territories or become citizens of existing independent territories. The independent territories are the laboratories where everything is tested and dry run, where you learn what you need to know, where we learn what we need to know, where the most efficient and capable show what they are made of, and where the national government is converted into the force it needs to be to take us to the next level. A few more words and I'll let you go. Green dollars will not be of value to you when you operate within the independent black economic system. However, you will still need green dollars to navigate your way through John and Jane Doe's system. And the independent new African government will need green dollars for the same reason all national governments need green dollars. Right now, the green dollar is the currency of international trade. In another broadcast, I will discuss what you need to do with your green dollars to promote the black economy and how you can enable the independent government, even while it is capable of carrying out only a small amount of responsibilities, to play a major role in popularizing, stabilizing, and circulating the black dollar. There are enough black individuals among us who already have the expertise and resources to get this locomotive moving, but they have masters that they don't want to disturb. But that's all right, because it's best that they not be among us. There are more than enough blacks who don't bow to contrarian masters that have what it takes to get the job done just as well as the so-called experts do. The problem is that we are not communicating with each other the way we should. This is one of the challenges black power economists have to bridge. Black power economists have to communicate with each other, figure out how to sidestep John and Jane Doe's goods and services, figure out how new Africans can fill the void generated when new Africans abandon John and Jane Doe's goods and services and this is very important, encourage new Africans to imagine new goods and services and encourage new Africans to make use of them. As I said, it sounds like a lot, but it is what people who make life better for black people must do. Think about what has been said today. It isn't complete because it will take the carrying out of the process to complete most of the blanks that are going to be exposed. But at least we are at the point where we can crank up the process. Think about what you heard today and go back to listen again to something I said in an earlier broadcast when you feel the need to do so. Remember, you can go to my website, www.asetbooks.com, and click on the radio link. That will take you to the page where you can listen to all of the previous broadcasts whenever you want to. Don't forget, you can contact me from my website at www.asetbooks.com. www.asetbooks.com. And there you can find much more information on this subject. I will be presenting the next broadcast next week, same day, same hour. Remember, we are black people. We are not dark-skinned white people. We need a nation of our own. Peace be with you, brothers and sisters, if you are willing to do what is necessary to get it.